Hey, welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired, break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Hey, today we are talking to James Eater in the United Kingdom. Hey, James.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you.
And you're still awake?
I'm still awake. It's just, I'm quite late into the night, but I'm so excited to make this work and to be chatting with you this evening. So yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. Well, the purpose of our podcast is to give a behind-the-scenes glimpse of what entrepreneurship and business ownership is really like, the good, the bad, and sometimes the ugly. We're here to talk openly about it all, what it's like, what life is like as an entrepreneurial leader and business owner. So, James, in 2005, you founded the website Student Beans at age 22 alongside with your brother, Michael. 11 years later, Student has gone from an idea to a brand recognized globally for its student offers and discounts. Known today as the Beans Group, the business also encompasses VoxBurner. VoxBurner is a youth events insights consultancy. Before I go any further, what is VoxBurner?
Sure. So VoxBurner was spun out of the ideas that we were working a lot with students, and a lot of companies and brands don't necessarily appreciate the huge kind of value and opportunity, I guess, engaging with the university student market is. So we thought, why don't we provide some insight and research to help position that for brands so they can understand a bit more, and a lot of the buzzwords, millennials, Gen Y, Gen Z, Gen X, and all of this. So a few years ago, then we put together an event called Youth Marketing Strategy, originally in the UK, and actually we launched 3 years ago in New York. That's an annual event that's called Youth Marketing Strategy, and it brings together thought leaders, insight and research, and positions it to help brands really understand this audience. And as part of that, we also do something called the Youth 100. That's the top 100 brands as voted for by 18 to 24s. And that research has been carried out again in the US the last 3 years, and in the UK as well, and the last 5 years or so. So it's for anyone, any brand that's interested in trying to understand that the next generation coming through and how to build a lifetime relationship with them, because they're often the ABC ones of the future, and the opportunity, if you ideally get a client today, then they'll stay with you for life. And so that's the kind of the thought leadership positioning that the Beans Group has delivering through VoxBurner.
Well, I like the level of thinking, you know, projecting out to your brand that you're developing the relationships for, you know, a lifetime.
Absolutely. And I think it's kind of very much underestimated. The opportunities that brands have by cementing their place in a student's mind. Often it's the first time, you know, especially in the United Kingdom, but globally, people are away from home for the first time. They're making decisions for the first time. They're going to the supermarket for the first time by themselves. And they've got access potentially to funding and resources that they didn't necessarily have before. And it's disposable income right then there that they know they're investing for their future. So it's kind of one of those times where they don't really have much responsibility, and they're not setting up families yet. They don't have mortgages. There's a whole kind of moment in time. They also have more time, you know, over half the year. They're not studying, they're traveling, or they've got their holidays. So it's a hugely amazing opportunity for brands to get involved.
VoxBurner employs a team of over 30 people and continues to recruit and grow. James is also the founder of Kentish Cluster alongside Camden Cluster. So Camden Cluster is a community with events that brings local businesses and people together in London. James is passionate in helping people realize their potential. Public speaking topics such as marketing, entrepreneurship, and building a brand are his forte. James's latest venture, which is kind of what prompted me for us to have you on the podcast, is your latest venture, which is Causer.co. It's
That's right.
CAUSR.co. And this company builds on his passion of connecting people and business. So causer.co is an app that is now on Apple, which when we spoke a number of weeks ago, you weren't quite on Apple yet.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's fast paced, lots of change, and things are kind of, yeah, really kicking off at the moment. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, can you explain a little bit more about why it's a game changer in social situations? What I understand about it so far that you've explained to me is that if you're in a situation like you're in line at a coffee shop and you've got people around you who are on your same app, that you can actually find out a little bit about them and start up a conversation. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I guess, you know, the question is, why is it a game changer? I think the challenge with a lot of social media and social networks today is that we're very digitally connected, but at the same time disconnected from those that are closest to us and those that are around us. And I recently saw an advert for something in a coffee shop, I think it's in New York, where you can lock away your phone and be like a digital detox, I guess, and away from it, which is a kind of fun experiment. And people are kind of getting away, but they're encouraging people to speak face-to-face. And I think one of the challenges and opportunities in society is how we can use technology to actually enable more connections and more opportunities. And I can, you know, as I share the story, I guess, when we started, and what was interesting, and there are a number of stories that happened. One was sitting on the subway in London and on the underground, and someone came to sit next to me with their resume in their hand. And I just turned to them and said, "Are you looking for a job?" And the short version of a longer story is they said yes, and they ended up coming to work for Student Beans, for the previous company. And the question is, what stops a lot of those conversations and people talking in those kind of situations? And there are, I guess, kind of three core pillars. The first is permission. So often we don't feel like we've got permission to speak to each other. Secondly is confidence. Even if we've got the permission, sometimes we just don't feel confident. We think if we say something wrong and it's not the right thing. And the third thing is context. And so often, whether it be standing in line somewhere or we're waiting, say we waiting in a coffee shop and then we have a meeting cancel, there are probably people in that coffee shop that you could collaborate with. There could be opportunities, but often we'll end up looking very busy and working through some stuff, we close our stuff and we leave, having missed potentially the opportunity in the room. And why it's a game changer is because there's nothing today that you can go on and proactively. The idea is if you're on the app, you're giving people permission to connect. And then within the app, you can join groups, which give people the more context. So just like if you're looking for a job, you can join the group saying, "I'm looking for a job or job opportunities." And that gives people the signal. And then the third kind of permission context is that you can update your status literally on the app to say, "I've had a meeting canceled. Does anyone want to meet for lunch?" Or, "I've had this happen. Anyone around?" Or, "I'm looking for this something specific," which is amazing because it builds on that, the permission, confidence, and context to enable people to connect as opposed to being, I say, a digital network. And that's why it's really game changing.
So how much are you using this in your everyday life?
So it's growing and building at the moment. And I had this week such a fun kind of connection with somebody who lives in Zurich. They were traveling to London. I've never met them before. And they're part of a global organization called ISEC, which is like an international student organization. And they were actually involved in building their original digital global network back quite a long time ago now. And never met him before, but we've spoken on the phone once. And I was having a meeting, actually, I was at Google's offices for an event. And I logged on to the phone when I arrived to see who was nearby. And he was less than 250 meters away on the app it showed me. So I requested to connect with him. And then he accepted in real time. And I said, "Oh, hey, it's great to see you around. What are you up to?" And he's like, "I'm traveling to London. I'm here for 24 hours. I'm just with someone for a drink," and we exchanged a bit more. And I said, "Look, you're fantastic to meet." And we ended up meeting for dinner, and that event would like never have happened had it not been for the app that I personally, you know, that scenario would never have happened.
I like the way you explain it as far as, you know, permission and to kind of get the context of, you know, why the person is there and why you're there and what you're looking for. That sounds really great. So that just happened. earlier this week.
That's an awesome success story. And I mean, there are so many others as well that have already happened. We had someone do £500,000 business deal as a result already of using the app. So they were working from home one day. They connected with someone. They ended up meeting up and they kind of exchanged and sharing. One was actually a recruiter. The other one was working with a big telecoms company. And they were actually recruiting some quite senior staff, but they hadn't been able to place them yet. And so they did a business deal. They also end up playing fencing together, which is quite a random sport. They also, one of them's going to the other person's wedding. And it's just a great example of, again, people connecting. And ultimately, people do business with people. And so, when you build that connection, it's really powerful.
Yes, exactly. Awesome. how many people are on your app right now?
So we've had over a few thousand downloads. And what's interesting about the app, though, is a few kind of very kind of special features. One is actually you can only see the nearest 300 people to you. And that's very intentional. At the moment, there's no search function. Because if you want to find someone specific, the idea is you can go on LinkedIn, you can go and search the internet, I want to find this person to do this thing. But it's about building and facilitating the serendipity and the randomness. So currently, you can go on and you can see the nearest 300 people. And you can also see if you can, you can join different groups. And so it could be startups, for example. We've got a group for startups. And if you click on that group, you'll then see the nearest 300 people to you that are interested in startups. So that's kind of a key thing. And also really exciting we're doing at the moment, which maybe we'll talk about a bit later, is around existing communities, how we can help them connect. The idea is that any listeners, if you've got a community of people that you can imagine, if you were sitting on the train and if you knew someone else was part of your community, whilst you didn't know them directly, but you were loosely connected because of the same organization or same, you know, as I said, community, then that'd be really powerful. We can help you facilitate that. And that's something really exciting that we just in the last 2 days, I've been speaking to one community. They've got 100,000 members that they're looking about how we can help them connect as they travel around the world.
Yeah, this is a real game changer. Takes a minute for me to think about, you know, how that would work. And as you're explaining it, I'm really getting a good picture. Yeah, I think that's really, it's exciting. So did you develop the software yourself? Are you working with a team of software developers?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've had this idea for quite a long time, and I originally worked up there's a great tool called Keynotopia, where you can do kind of programming and planning. So it's like a PowerPoint template that you can literally create something in a clickable demo. So that was like really the starting point. So I put a huge amount of time in clicking every single screen, how it would look, how it would work. And then I ended up working initially, and I actually did the same thing with my previous company. We started working with an agency to begin with. So in England, they're based in Bristol, and they're about 2 hours from London. And I was there every week during while we were programming and developing it. But it was a great team of people. And I think one of the challenges about growing any business is finding the right team and people. And my fear was that if we started in-house and had the team, you know, if they've never worked together before, there are challenges associated with that. And I wanted to make sure that we got something that we could get out of the door that people could use. You know, it could be as a minimum, it was in the App Store first, and then we're looking to launch Android later this year to take the learnings that we've got from Apple. So yeah, at the moment there's a team in Bristol that are supporting me with this, and we're growing the team. I've got a number of people that I'm interviewing at the moment to build out the team, but at the moment it's very lean, and I think some companies overextend themselves too quickly. So I think that's one of the kind of the pitfalls. I know it's like really focusing on what's the most important things to do initially to build the product, and then, you know, slowly take on more people. It's my advice or opinion, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, can you give us a little more background? So you started Student Beans at age 22, and you're around, what, 33 right now?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So 11 long years.
Yeah. So I take it you grew up in London?
That's right, yeah. So I grew up in North London, not too far from Camden, which we've already mentioned. And yeah, I had a quite a big family. There are five children in my family, so I'm one of five. And I'm in the middle.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting, I guess, being in the middle, because you kind of, I was the youngest for 5 years, and then my sister came along, and I think it definitely gave me a lot of kind of independence, because not that I was hidden in the middle, but sometimes that's how it felt, but they just let me get on with things and, you know, allow me to, yeah, grow and develop and, yeah, play that role in the family, I guess.
Yeah, because sometimes the parents kind of relax a little bit after the first two children. And they say, oh, okay, I'm getting the hang of this now. I can just relax and let this, you know, person kind of explore the world a little bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
And what did your parents do for a living, or what are they doing for a living?
Yeah, so my dad was a barrister and worked in law, and I think it's interesting because growing up around that, like, you were self-employed in effect. So there was an amazing work ethic that I guess I saw and that I kind of grew up around. And my mum as well was involved. She studied to be a homeopath while I was growing up, and, was then developed and like did Reiki and very much kind of alternative medicine and kind of doing a practice. So also, I say, very entrepreneurial. But a funny story, I think it's worth sharing, that my grandparents were, they were originally in Austria, in Vienna, and they left and they went to Malta, in World War II. And they had a hat factory and they were selling hats.
Okay.
And one of the things that my grandfather used to do was to travel to England and buy hats and stock for the hat shop and then sell the hats. And he came over to England and he ended up buying some dresses. And so it's told is my grandmother had a big argument with my grandfather. Why did you buy these dresses? We're a hat shop. We sell hats. You shouldn't have bought dresses. Anyway, they put the dresses up in the window and the dresses sold more quickly than the hats. So then my grandmother said to my grandfather, why didn't you buy more dresses? So then he went back, he bought more dresses. And when they came to England, when my father was five, they ended up creating shops in London that they were selling. It was called Elegance Maternelle, which was a shop selling like high-end maternity wear. So there was nothing on the market. You know, when people get pregnant, they couldn't really wear nice clothes because there wasn't anything really designer clothes for pregnant women.
Sure.
So they tapped that and built that business. And, you know, I remember going to visit them when I was a child, going to visit them in the shop and going out for a pastry on Marylebone High Street, which is a lovely high street in London. And, very, very fond memories of that. And, really special times. And I think, you know, there's definitely something about having family heritage in terms of entrepreneurship. And in London, in the UK, we had a program called Startup Loans, where the government were helping young people start businesses. And I was an ambassador for that a few years ago. And 11 out of 12 of us had either parents or grandparents that were entrepreneurs or self-employed. And I think that goes a long way to saying the importance of setting up the right culture and right environment and the right support, because if people have experienced it themselves or their parents have, they've kind of grown up in that environment.
Yeah. And they've, with the stories that you've explained, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, not at all.
With your grandfather and your grandmother, I mean, sharing how, or noticing things in the marketplace, you know, of opportunities where you could build something. That's not something you teach in a classroom. You know, you were in their life, you know, seeing exactly how they capitalized on an opportunity and made something wonderful for a need for people in the marketplace. Pregnant women needed nice clothes.
Absolutely. And I think it's also there, I mean, arriving in this country and building something, you know, from scratch. And it's really amazing. And, you know, I think we look at this kind of the state of the world today and terms of like immigration, and all of us have moved from somewhere. You know, it's amazing And just, I think, you know, I'm so lucky, I guess, at that stage to grow up in England and to, you know, have the freedom to do what I do. And, you know, because it's, I guess, what my grandparents went through and what they provided for, you know, for their children, and then what my parents, you know, have provided for us. And it's, yeah, really special to have been able to grow up in that kind of environment and see what they did.
Did you notice any challenges that they had with business ownership that kind of are stuck in your memory?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we went through some big recessions in the United Kingdom kind of when I was, I'd say, growing up in the late 80s. So when I was kind of 10 or 11, and the challenges that they faced, and unfortunately they did, they had to close their shops. And I think there was one time, I think, that they had a loan, and this is maybe hearsay, and I remember my father then telling me about it, but they, you know, had a loan that the interest rates then went up to like 20% or something. And it was just, you know, unheard of, and how to be able to pay those back. And, you know, I think not maybe we were a bit sheltered from it, but I knew that it's a challenge, and it, you know, and the difficulties. And I think at one point they had multiple shops and then they had to close one. And, you know, it was, yeah, sad to hear it. But it's, you know, I think life lessons there.
Yeah, they're real life lessons. Well, that's what life lessons are, pretty real. What did they do after they closed the shops?
To be honest, then, I mean, they were getting into retirement, and you know, it was time for them, and I think they were in a flat that they then sold and moved, and you know, it was. You know, I think it was both sad for both of them, but I think it was the right time when it did close. You know, it's one of those things. I remember it being open, and then it was no longer. And I don't remember, you know, the weekend that it closed down or anything like that. I guess emotionally, it's probably they kind of sheltered us from the ins and outs of exactly what was going on. But I know I remember that it was a difficult time for them.
So, and they must have put some money aside for them to be able to retire.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. And again, there was never any concern around that. And I'm sure that, you know, the family wouldn't have let them, you know, waste away, as it were. And unfortunately, they're both no longer with us. But we, my grandfather would have been 100 years old last year. And we went as a family, my brothers and sister, so I've got one sister and the five kids, and my dad went to Vienna for the first time all together in November, just 3 days before my grandfather would have been 100. And we went to visit where he grew up, the hat factory that they originally had in Vienna. And it was this amazing kind of walk down kind of history and, you know, the heritage and where we've come from. And yeah, it was really, really special.
Oh, beautiful story. Yeah, nice memory to have, too.
Yeah.
Remember. When do you feel you started showing leadership skills? And I use the definition of, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Brené Brown, but she did a lot of research and collected kind of a definition of what a leader is from a fair amount of research. And she defines a leader as anyone who holds herself or himself accountable for finding the potential in people and processes. And when did you start noticing that within yourself? Like, when did that start showing up?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, I guess from an entrepreneurial perspective, and I intertwine that with leadership and think about, you know, what things did I do or what did I get involved in? And we've got a show called Blue Peter in England that does a like bring and buy sales. So you raise money for charity and you pull things together. And I remember being very, I say, proactive from that perspective.
Yeah.
And then I guess my, again, first entrepreneurial thing mainly was we ended up creating a taking photos of dogs in the park. So this is before, you know, a digital camera was on every phone. And the idea is, and we called it M&J photos. So it's the first time I worked with Michael, and we pulled together these pictures. And so I'd go to the park 1 week, take photos, and then develop them in a dark room. and then take them back and show the dog owners the following week. And if they liked any of the pictures, then they could buy them. And I, yeah, that was, I guess, a fun experience. And we made a bit of money and, you know, something together from that. And that was, I guess, a first, you know, I was 13, 14.
Okay.
When I started doing that.
So you're thinking about not only leading you noticed something in the marketplace and then you figured out a way to take charge. You said proactive. And then you created this and made some money from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did that seem like just natural? Like that just came to you as a natural thing?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was also, I guess, always, I say the organizer or like would always be, being at the heart of like wanting to do things. I think one of the big things as well was being, I was on like summer camp as a kid and like would go away and be, I then developed to be kind of a youth leader and looking after kids on a summer camp when I was kind of 16, 17. And I think that's, you know, a huge like life defining kind of experience of being responsible. There were four of us responsible for around 25 kids, you know, for us for 2 weeks. Managing and doing rock climbing and doing kind of like informal education and studying. And it was just this, you know, it's up to us, and we were getting 3-4 hours sleep a night, and just the energy just came from somewhere, and we were really creating this amazing community and helping these kids kind of create like lifelong friendships and developing ourselves as well at the same time. And like that for me was huge massive like learning experience, and enjoying that like a huge amount. And I remember that, so yeah, that was again, I guess, a massive stepping stone in my journey,
right?
Like the leadership journey.
And what prepared you, or who helped prepare you? Like, this sounds like you got a lot of confidence in taking these kids in, being a youth leader and helping them learn how to rock climb and studying and doing all those activities that you do at camp. Also feeling good about helping others.
Yeah, I think, you know, that I think it's about having, yeah, like good role models around you. And I guess the structure of the youth kind of from a leadership perspective is that there were people, I guess, 5-6 years older than me that I'd seen do it for us.
Okay.
And that there's, I guess, that kind of special bond. So I guess I'd been through the program, I guess, as a kid experiencing it and how fantastic those summers were. And like gaining independence, you know, being 8 years old and your parents saying, okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. You know, often a lot of parents don't have the confidence to put their kids out there like that. And I think, you know, it's kind of the sink or swim kind of thing.
Just go. Right. Which is everything entrepreneurial.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I genuinely thank my parents for that experience and to give me, I guess, you know, the confidence. I mean, also what was interesting, I relay back when I was 8, I couldn't even reach the slot for the machine to pay for my ticket for the subway going home. And a lot of parents wouldn't let their kids go home by themselves. But my school finished 15 minutes before my brother's, so we just had a shorter day. And my mum was studying to be a homeopath, and it just, there were a set of circumstances that just meant, well, you know, if I'm going to get home, I'm going to go home by myself. And my parents were fine with that. And, you know, I was fine with it. And to get around the fact that I couldn't reach the cashier to pay for my ticket, I had a pass. So I just used the monthly pass, which solved that problem. And, you know, there I was from the age of 8 till 11. Like most kids were not allowed until they were 11 to go by themselves on the underground. And that even just in a very small thing is actually a huge thing as a kid in terms of getting that experience and independence and not needing to worry, you know.
And you felt so privileged, you know, that you're like, look at me, I'm 8 and I get to do this. And 11-year-olds, you know, I don't have to wait till I'm 11.
Exactly. So I think, you know, those on the one hand, you could, some people might say, oh, I was a bit neglected, but then that gave me, I guess, this confidence and I can do it by myself and that's fine. And just kind of crack on with things.
Yeah. Well, we're at the tail end of our first podcast session together. This has been delightful. I appreciate the conversation and the genuine sharing of your background and how you grew up and your entrepreneurial environment that you grew up in has really helped you to kind of ground you in solidly into your own entrepreneurial leader.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's great to be. I'm trip down memory lane. I'm not often having these types of conversations and really being asked, I guess, you know, the narrative of where I came from. And it's, thank you for asking the questions.
Oh, good. Are you up for a second mentoring conversation?
Absolutely. Rowing to go.
Great. All right. So we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And stay tuned as we continue learning more about James Eder and Causer.co. And we'll see you next Monday.
See you then. Thanks.
Okay. Bye, James. And thanks, Mike Cabea, our sound engineer and photographer and great friend. Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.